So today's talk or lecture or class is going to be somewhat polemical. I'm not making up these words. Polemical meaning that I have a very specific agenda. It's polemical, it's agenda-driven. By the last Shemitah, one of the things that happened is that the religious Zionist community, and it's very difficult to speak of them as one because it's not one person, it's not one community, but I found what I thought was a trend, and the trend was one of the people who we would normally, and now I'll be terrible and I'll use terms that shouldn't use, I would say the people that are a little bit more chardal, if I can use that term, tended to move away from the Hetu Mechira more towards the Otzer Beit Din. And it's sort of looking at it, the Hetu Mechira is really Bidiavad, which is true, and the Otzer Beit Din is much better, which I don't think is true. And there were a couple of sides to this. One of the, in my neighborhood, I mean, I gave classes for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I'm sure, but I gave it on Shabbat, and I'm sure, which none of them were recorded, and I'm sure that, as far as I know, I don't trust all the people in my shul. There's a bunch of high-tech people, and I'm sure one of these days I will find out that something I said was recorded, but I think I'm safe still on Shabbat. And I'm sure they were all sick of it also, because I must have given at least 10 lectures. And then after I finished, like one of the other rabbis in the neighborhood said, oh, why don't we get all the rabbis in the neighborhood to give lectures? And I said, well, you're a little late on this. So I only went to one that a different rabbi gave. And for some reason, I sort of felt he was not happy to see me when I walked in. And he gave it on Otzer Beit Din. And then I may have attacked him a little bit. I try to be nice, but I didn't try very hard. So, one of the things that came across was that, and this is one of the arguments, is that if you follow Otzer Beit Din, then you can eat the fruits that have Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. If you do the Hetu Mechira, so then what you've done is you've sold the land to someone who's not Jewish, and then theoretically, if it worked, the land no longer has Kedushat Shviit. So if the land doesn't have Kedushat Shviit, so then the fruit or vegetables, whatever, don't have Kedushat Shviit. But if you do the Otzer Beit Din, so then it retains Kedushat Shviit. And if you eat it, then you're basically, it's like eating a korban. The guy who gave the class, that's what he had said. It's like eating a korban. How can you eat something with real Kedushat today? And he was getting all misty-eyed, talking about how this is so great. And I was amused. So, as I said, I'm going to deal really with two parts. So I hope to be able to do it and not to bore you too much or... But there's really two issues over here. One is the Otzer Beit Din itself, and the other is the fruit or the vegetables of the Otzer Beit Din. So, as I said, I'm going to try to do both of them together, and let's begin. Unlike the Hetu Mechira, the Otzer Beit Din actually has a source. They claim, that when Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was trying to figure out, can I sign off on the Hetu Mechira? They claim that he was searching to find this book of this rabbi who lived in Hebron, who 200 years before that had written a tshuva on how you can sell the land, a Rav Revivo. Whether that story is true or not, I don't know, because others had written about it and quoted it. But anyway, that's what they say. But over here, we're talking about Otzer Beit Din, black and white. Tosefta, let's read the Tosefta, and then we're going to break it down. But first, let's read it. It's the first source. Birishona, what does Birishona mean? Originally, Birishona is originally, Hayu shluche beitin, yoshvim al pitche ayarot, that emissaries of the beitin would sit by the entrance to the cities, kol mi shevei mevi perot, betoch yado, notlin otomi menu, anybody who would try to bring fruit into the land. Now again, just in case we're not clear, this is Tosefta in Masechet Shvi'it. This is talking about during the sabbatical year, during the year of Shemitah. So what does it say? That the court would stand, and my best comparison right now would be they would act as custom agents. They were checking to see what was being smuggled into the city. So it says that originally, agents of the court, Yoshvim al Pitchei Ayarot, they would stand by the entrance to the city. Kol Misha Mevi Peirot, anybody who brought Peirot Shvi'it into the city, Bitoch Yado, what would they do? Not Linotomi Menu. What does that mean? They would confiscate it. Binotnin Lo Mehen Mazon Shalosh Se'udot. They would give him, the owner, enough food for three meals. Why would they give him enough food for three meals? So let me pause for a second. If I own a field during Shemitah, am I allowed to eat the food? Am I allowed to take the food? Am I allowed to bring the food into my house? So what's the answer? That I should make my field, it's a mitzvah, to make the field hefker, ownerless, or maybe even it's ownerless by itself, and I can't make it unownerless. So exactly how that nuance goes, the thing has to be ownerless. If it's ownerless, am I allowed to eat it? Well, yeah. You're allowed to eat things from Shvi'it. So what's the rule? If it's ownerless, I'm allowed to take for immediate usage. What is the definition of immediate usage? Now you know. What is it? Enough for three meals. Does three meals make sense of immediate usage? But their three meals would be not what they ate on the normal day. In a normal day in antiquity, they only had two meals. When did they have three meals? Shabbat. So you're allowed to take. So therefore, three meals was considered to be immediate usage. So even if I own the field, I can go out to the field and take enough, let's say I have apples growing on the tree, I could take enough apples for three meals. How many apples for three meals? I don't know. So they would confiscate all of the fruit that the guy was trying to smuggle in, and they would give him enough for three meals. V'hashar, the rest of it, machnisin oto la'otsar. The rest of it they would stick into the otsar. Hence the phrase, otsar beitin, because the beitin would have agents confiscating the food and then putting it in an otsar. What does otsar mean? A storage facility. V'ashar machnisin oto la'otsar shabi'ir, higiyazman te'inim, when it was the time that the te'inim were ripe, shluche beitin sochrim po'alim, the beitin then would hire workers, odrin notan v'osim otam dvela, whatever it is you do with te'inim, to get them ready. V'konsinoto b'chavayot u'machnisim oton l'otzar shebe'ir. Higi azman anavim, shluchei beitin, sochrim po'alin, butzrim oto v'dochim oto b'gad, v'konsinoto b'chavayot u'machnisim oton l'otzar shebe'ir. Higi azman zeitim, shluchei beitin, sochrim po'alim u'moskim otam v'otnin otam beit habad, v'konsinoto b'chavayot u'machnisim oton l'otzar shebe'ir. So far, what's interesting about this Tosefta, well, first of all, it talks about past tense, Rishona. This is what they used to do. So that's the first thing that jumps out at us. So why was this once the situation? Second thing that it says is that they would confiscate the fruits. It doesn't say anything about vegetables. Then it gives us a couple of examples. And what examples were they? They were examples of, unlike my example of apples, its examples were te'inim, anavim, and zeitim. Right? So only gave examples of certain fruits. So we wonder why that's the case. It continues and says, so what would they do with them? U'mechalkin mehem arvei shabbatot, kol echad v'achad lefi beito, higiyashat. Okay, so then they would give them out to everybody. Why? Because the fruits are ownerless. They would give them out to everybody every Erev Shabbat, each person according to how many people lived in the house, what their needs are. So therefore, I'm going to say again, they would give for three meals, which was not said yet, and give three meals according to how many people have in the house. You have five people in the house, five times three, so you need 15 portions worth, and that's what they would do. They would give it out. Higia shata bi'ur. Biur means that it was no longer being eaten in the fields by the animals. That's the time for biur, to get them out of your house, because you're not allowed to store them. Higi man biur, ani'im ochlim achar biur, avalo ashirim, di Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi omer, achad ani'im v'achad ashirim ochlim achar biur. Rabbi Shimon omer, ashirim ochlim min otsar achar habiur. And the first issue was this whole end really part about the otsar or not? It sounds like it is, and I want to pause now and think. Does this serve as the model for the Otsar Beitin, which is done today? In the Otsar Beitin, which is done today, they will take the field And the field, by the way, today, either vegetables or fruit, everything you can find otzer beitin, you can find cucumbers otzer beitin, so that's already a question why the examples were fruit. And they will say that the guy who owns it has made it ownerless, but the beitin is hiring him to work for them. So therefore, somehow, the fact the beitin is now hiring him, I suppose it's sort of like an example of the collective owns it and the individual doesn't own it. And then they would pay the guy in the field the amount of money that it cost him in costs. The watering, the planting, what it cost him to actually grow it. And then they'll pay him for his time, but they'll claim that they'll never pay him for the fruit or for the vegetables. And therefore, theoretically, then, if you have the costs of all this, theoretically, the otzer beitin should cost less money than other things on the market, because you're not paying for the fruits, you're not paying for the vegetables, you're just paying for the work that was put in. If the guy's going to hire a truck and the truck is going to bring it to the city, so you're going to pay for the truck driver, you're going to pay for the truck. So what they do is the otzer beitin today is the beitin will say to the owner, it's not yours, it's ours. Because it's hefker, so it belongs to us. But that's a very big question. Why does it belong to us? They'll say, well, because the otzer beitin that we just now studied. And now that we own it, we're going to pay you for all of the work that you've done, and then we're going to bring it to the city, and then the consumer is going to pay for all of the costs that were involved in it. And they claim that the source for all of this is what we just now read in the Tosefta. Now, I have to pause a second and say, is this really the case? Because when I read the Tosefta, without knowing what they do today, I saw very different things in the Tosefta. Should I go over what I saw? I saw that the field is hefker, it's ownerless. Because it's ownerless, if the guy tries to smuggle it in, what do? We catch him and we confiscate it. And then we put it in the otzar. So that's talking about catching somebody who's dealing with Shemitah produce. Did we pay him? Did we pay the owner for all the work that he put into this? In the Tosefta, did we pay him? Answer, no. Did the people who got the fruit at the end, did they pay for it? No, it was distributed for free. So the otzer beitin in the Tosefta is an example of the beitin making sure that everything was going to be done for free. Now you can ask a couple questions on this. Who hires the beitin's workers to work? There was something else along the way. They would take the grapes and they would hire somebody to turn it into wine. They would take the olives and turn it into olive oil. They used money for that. They hired people to do this. Where did that money come from? Okay, that's a fair question. But read sources 2 and 3. These are the description of the food part of Shemitah in both Mishpatim and in Parshat Behar. Source 2, Vashviyatishmatena, Vinatashta. What does that mean? You have to leave it hefker. You have to leave it ownerless. Who should eat it? The Achlu Oiv Evyone Amecha. Vitrom Tochal Chayata Sadeh. Kain Taser Lakamracha Lizetecha. That you leave it ownerless, and who eats it? The poor can go in and eat it. And the animals of the field can eat it. In Vayikra it says, "Vayta Shabbat ha'aretz lachem la'ochla, lecha, ula'avdecha, v'lamatecha, ulescherecha, ulatoshavcha, hagarim imach." So by the time I get to Behar, what I realize, who can eat it? Everybody can eat it. In Mishpatim, the poor have an advantage. In Behar, everybody eats it. So the question, of course, is going to be, how do I reconcile these two verses, which does not concern me as much right now. But what do I know about the produce of Shemitah? It has to be declared ownerless. The mitzvah of Shemitah is for me as the farmer to know that God owns the land belongs to God, the produce does not belong to me, everything is ownerless. The mitzvah for the farmer is to open up the field and to say anybody can take whatever they want. Does the otzer beitin in the Tosefta go against the Torah's mandate in terms of declaring it ownerless? No, quite the opposite. What does it do? It institutionalizes the ownerless aspect of it by doing what? by the guy who's taking his stuff from the field to the city to do what to him? To confiscate it from him. So the purpose of the otsar was to confiscate things from the farmer, then to see to it that it gets distributed to the person or the people who are going to eat it. The most important thing that I want to stress about the Tosefta is money never went to the farmer on the one hand, because it's not his, rather it was confiscated, and money was never paid by the consumer, rather it was given out for free. Which means what you see about the Tosefta, it was a way of making sure that things get distributed. The question that I want to ask, though, is this a situation which is l'chadchila, or is this b'diavad? Is this was institutionalized because this was the right way to do things? Or was this in order to catch the criminal who was trying to smuggle the stuff into the city? Because it didn't say that we send people over to the fields and then do this. So again, I'm asking, is this whole description over here a prescription of the proper way to behave during Shemitah? Or is this whole thing a way of catching criminals who are trying to smuggle things in, and therefore you put the custom agents in and you make sure that people don't get a chance to bring it in? On top of everything else, right? Is that enough questions? You want more questions? On top of everything else, I'll ask another question, which I already raised. Why is it Barishona? Why is this originally? Why does the Tosefta describe this as past tense and not present tense? And on top of all that, is this the halakha? Just because it's Tosefta, is this the halakha? Is it mentioned in the Bavli? No. Is it mentioned in the Yerushalmi? No. Is it mentioned in the Rambam? No. So is this an acceptable halakha? Or is this a Tosefta that we just don't rule like? So those are the various questions over here, and I hope you realize along the way that some of them were pretty strong questions. Yes, you noticed that? Too strong. I'm not nice, right? I told you, everything is polemical today. Yes. Notlin notomi menu. Yeah. Notlin, they take it. Yeah. Notlin, it's to take. Yeah. But the continuation, and they leave him enough for three meals. It's that continuation also.
So he brought a whole bunch of stuff
and he was trying to sneak in. What is, so what's the amount that he's allowed to own? He's not allowed to take from his field more than that. Here they caught somebody who's obviously, I'm sorry because you can disagree with me now, who's obviously trying to sneak in and to sell his Shemitah produce. So what do they do to him? They say, no, you can't do that. You're only allowed to have how much? Enough for three meals. We're confiscating everything other than the three meal part. You get to keep three meals. We're taking the rest because it's not yours.
So
I'm going to say it again. When I'm reading this and knowing the lack of mentioning of this in the Bavli and the Rishalmi and the Rambam, when I'm reading this, I'm reading something they used to do because there was a need to do it. It sounds like because there were criminals around. When I call them criminals, I'm saying people that were smuggling Shemitah produce. I'm reading people trying to go in and trying to get into the cities with their produce. They catch him. They give him enough meals, enough for three meals, because that's all he's allowed to have. And they confiscate the rest. Well, what do they do with the rest? So they put it in an otsar. They put it in a place. And then they distribute it all in the proper time. They give it all out. Now, I'm going to say it again. This otsar Beit Din, compared to what they do today, in my mind, has no comparison whatsoever. And I'm gonna get stronger. I'm not stronger yet, because I'm going to try to show you some of the Rishonim and how they deal with it. But it has nothing to do with one another. If somebody wants to say to me the following, listen, we call it the Otsar Beit Din because we just don't want to make up a name, we want to use something. It's not the same as the Tosefta. But we think it's a good solution because Shemitah is Drabanan, and we think, and then give me all kinds of other reasons why they think that. Okay. But so far, this sounds like a way of dealing with criminals, not a lichadchila way of creating a system. Okay, and on top of all that, I don't know why it said Barishona. On top of all that, I don't see any vegetables over here. What's the whole deal with vegetables? Why are they missing? On top of all that, the Gemara doesn't bring this. On top of all that, the Rambam doesn't rule this way. So we have to then start wondering, so does this have any impact to what the halacha is today? Now, one of the people who does bring it is the Ramban. So, of course, when I went to the shir that the guy gave, and I asked him, do any Rishonim rule like this? So of course what he answered was, because he was prepared, he said the Ramban. I said, do you know what the Ramban actually says about this? Which is when it got a little bit more, you know, I'm enjoying myself too much, right? So that's certainly Yetzer Hara. So I apologize for this. The Ramban is on that pasuk in Vayikra, or the next pasuk with Lehem Lefaya, that it's given out, people should be eating the Shemitah Pradis. Towards the second paragraph, it says Vishanu b'Tosefta, and it's taught in Tosefta, and it quotes the Tosefta Berishona, and I'm going to skip all of that. Second line from the bottom, Mishiyesh lo peirot shviit b'giyah shatat biur mechalek mehen l'shchainav v'l'kvorav v'l'miyuadav v'motzi meniach ha-petach b'tova omer Achenu Beit Yisrael kol mi sh'tzarich lito yavo v'yito v'chozer machnis l'toch b'to v'ochav alech ad shat sh'yichlo kol zeh shenoy b'tosefta v'vadim yifurah sh'ein biur elu l'va'er peirot mirishito u'lahafki ram. That's a whole side point. What does it mean, bi'ur shvi'it? Bi'ur chametz means to burn it. The Ramban understands that bi'ur shvi'it means to make it ownerless. The Rambam thinks that bi'ur shvi'it means to burn it. So leave that. And then continues. Vesulem takanat mi divrehem. And they did this as a takanas. The Ramban is about, right, second paragraph from page number 2, to tell us they would do the Bishonayu beitin osin otzer b'chol ir v'ir. So he's saying, he makes it sound like a lechetchila. Mitchilat yitziat peirot, hayunot limotam, by the way, he only seems to be mentioning peirot, miyad mivyeim, umachnisim otam laotzar. What's the difference between peirot versus yirakot? Fruits versus vegetables, what's the difference? That's good, from a city, right? There's another difference. Fruits will grow by themselves, you just have to water them. You have to do minimal work because the tree's already there. Vegetables won't grow unless you plant them. So the fact that it only talked about fruits means that you can let your land be by itself. Let's even argue right now that you can't plant, you can't water, you can. But let's even argue you can't water, it rains enough, and apples grow on your tree. You can't have cucumbers unless somebody planted cucumbers. The fact that it doesn't speak about vegetables may be for a very good reason. And what's that? They're not going to grow unless somebody broke Shemitah and planted during Shemitah. So the fruit point over here already also raises this other issue. Why don't talk about vegetables? Well, as I said, there may be a very good reason. You're right. They're keeping Shemitah, so their fruits grow by themselves. Why? Because the tree's been there for 50 years. So every year the fruits are going to grow. The olives will grow and the grapes are going to grow and so on and so forth. So he says originally they would have these places in every city. When the fruits would begin to grow, they would bring them to the otsar. By the way, you noticed it's a little nicer now. We don't have the confiscation going on. They bring it to the otsar. Ukishozman lekitat koloto amin kigon shabazman shel katsiro kits ba'eta batzir higia beitin sochem polim botzurim mosakim v'loktim kolotan amin v'dorchim mos. Meaning, beitin would do all the work because it's ownerless. Right, but God obeyed God. Kedera Sharashanim, but onim la otzar shelahen. So, if it's ownerless, the individual can't own it. So apparently, this is saying that it's all hefker. So who's the representative of the community? The Beit Din is representing the community, so they could take it and prepare it. The elu aperot amuchnasim la otzar Beit Din ainu tzrichim biur achas shekfar murin hein min abayit. You never have to do biur anymore. This is very important. Because it was already taken away from the original owner. And everybody can eat it. So this is a way of arranging you can eat it. And what's the whole reason for this, the Ramban writes? In order to make sure that somebody doesn't hold on to it by himself or that business is ever done with them. So do you realize the question that one can ask based upon this Ramban? All right? La'asot behem schora. This entire issue of the Otzer Beitin is for one reason, The Ramban writes, or two reasons to say, that a person doesn't hold on to himself, so we confiscate it, or we make sure that he gives it to the Beit Din. So therefore, what do I want to avoid? A person owning Shemitah Pradus. So now it's already owned by the collective. But what's the second reason that he says? To avoid what? Schora. What does Schora mean? To do, I want a better word for Schora. Business. Which means he's saying, the whole purpose for the Otzer Beit Din, and you go back and read the Tosefta, is that money never changes hands for this produce, which means that the owner will never get the money for it, because it's confiscated. The buyer never has to pay for it, because the whole purpose of this is to avoid business. So of course, when I did go to my one chair on Otzer Beit Din, I asked, how can you use the Ramban as your support when the Ramban says that you can't sell it? And in the Otzer Beit Din today, you give money to the guy, they claim not for the produce, for everything else, but then it's sold in stores. This is talking about give it out for free. A real Otzer Beit Din is that the Beit Din helps facilitate the giving out of Shemitah produce for free. When you go to a market which sells Arba Minin, and you have an etrog for 50 shekel and 75 shekel and for 100 shekel, and you then ask, and it says Otzer Beit Din on it, you say, I don't understand it. Why did it cost more money to grow this etrog than that etrog that's nicer? Why did it cost more money to grow the nicer one? Why am I allowed to pay you for this? Oh, because it's Otzer Beit Din. Why am I allowed to pay you for this? The Ramban says that the whole purpose is to avoid schora. Is that schora? Of course it's schora, which means that the whole thing, I'm sorry for saying this, the whole thing is a joke. The whole thing is a joke. And I'll say it again. I think the Hetem Mechira is much better because it's less of a joke. Why is it less of a joke? Because you're selling the land, then you avoided the Kedushat Shviyat at all, so now you can buy and sell the things. There's no problem with Schora. Over here, the advantage of the Otzer Beit Din, theoretically, is that you still have Kedushat Shviyat. But if you still have Kedushat Shviyat, you're not allowed to buy and sell it. You're not allowed to do any type of business with it. The Ramban says the whole purpose of the Otzer Beit Din is to avoid business. So in today's Otzer Beit Din, you're paying and you're selling. I'm going to say it again, that they're going to try to avoid it on both sides. So what are they going to say? They're going to say, no, you're not really buying it, and he's not really selling it. You're paying him for the amount of work that he did not for the fruit, but you're paying him for, I don't know, for the truck. You're paying him for getting up early in the morning and walking around and making sure nothing ate the fruit. You're paying him for all the side things, but the fruit's not included in it. So then you have to ask one question. Okay, if you're paying for all the work which is around it, but not for the fruit, then why does it cost more money than just the fruit? Right? How? So they'll say, because there's not enough people doing Otzer Beit Din. They'll say, okay, I still don't understand. You're not paying for the fruit. How did it cost more money? No, it's a question of supply and demand. That's great. But it sure sounds like there's money, schora going on over here. Right? It sounds like schora is going on. Right? I wish I had a better word for schora. Not just business. There's buying and selling. There's a better word. Right? He's getting paid. The consumer is paying. The owner is getting money. So how can you tell me there's not schora going on? When the Torah says, open up your field and have it for free, how is it free when he's getting paid, and how is it free when I'm paying for the produce? There's something wrong over here. Am I being clear enough about my slight objection? Yeah. He's saying the Otzer Beit Din was institutionalized in order to facilitate that ownerless produce is distributed for free.
The owner bring his produce, take it away.
Right. Right. Okay. Right. And he says it clearly. That's the whole point over here. The whole point is to make sure that there's no money being changing hands along the way. One of the few I don't believe we have any. So it's very interesting. I'm going to say it again now. This is not mentioned in the Bavli. It's not mentioned in the Mishalmi. It's not mentioned in any other place that actually agrees with this, that this is what's done. So the fact that Ramban mentions this and says it positively is important. The fact that Rambam doesn't may also be important. The other thing is, what's the Barishona? Some have suggested that the Rishona over here means that when we still had the Beit HaMikdash and we still had the Shkalim, which were donated to the Beit HaMikdash, so therefore with the Shkalim, the court had money in order to do such things. See, part of the problem today is that they don't have money. The courts don't have money. If somebody opens up an Otzer Beit Din, they're not walking in and saying, I have a whole bunch of money, I'm investing in this. They try to take the money from the consumer and then pay back the person who's growing it, and the Otzer Beit Din stands in the middle and they're saying, we're the facilitator of this, and therefore he doesn't really own it because it's owned, we represent the collective. By the way, that's very interesting. Who says you have the right to... Who says, if I today want to open up an Otzer Beit Din, who said I have the right to do this? When it says Rishona, they used to do it, maybe that was a real Beit Din. Maybe it was a Beit Din of people who actually had real smicha. Maybe it was different types of representatives, not just anybody who wants to open up an Otzer Beit Din. And Rishona, I'm going to say it again, may have been when there was a Beit Din that had resources, which was able to do this. Once a Beit Din doesn't have resources, then obviously the whole system falls apart, which may be another reason. Which means even the Tosefta doesn't talk about it in the present tense, even the Tosefta talks about it in the past tense, which then creates another question mark over here about, does the Tosefta believe that this is a doable solution today? One of the other Rishonim who mentions this is the Rash Siriello, source number 5, and he says, "V'kol zaya b'tchilat shvi'it umi perot shishit de'it bo kedusha machmat l'kitatan b'shvi'it mosrim liyad habetim notin k'day yomo bilvad." What he says is that this only works for things which were planted in the 6th year, but it doesn't work for things planted in the 7th year. Which means very few Rishonim actually talk about the Otzer Beit Din, and we're basically 0-2 in terms of the way that it's implemented today, because today they're going to let the farmer plant vegetables as well, and say, the whole question over the years was what we let him do, do you let a non-Jew do it, do you do rabbinical prohibitions, Torah prohibitions, and so on. But the Rashas, who's called Rashas, the Rash Siriello, he's one of the commentaries on Shviit, so on the Yerushalmi, so he says, no, it's only for Perot Shishit. It does not work for Perot Shviit. So that just now severely limited the Otzer Beit Din's ability to work. And the Ramban says the whole purpose of this was in order to avoid any kind of commerce. The whole purpose over here is to make sure that no money changes hands over here, that there's no schora transaction. Okay. The second part that I want to do, and I still want to get to the first Otzer Beit Din in modern times, but the second part I want to do is a continuation of this point of the Ramban, because he said that you shouldn't do Schora. Why does he care so much about Schora? So the answer is because it's Asur Min HaTorah. So let me explain. Source 6, Mishnah in Shviit. Shviit nitna la'achila, v'lishtia, u'lisicha, lechol devar shadarko lechol, v'lasuch devar shadarko lasuch, lo yasuch yayin v'chometz, v'osachu et ha-shemen. Shviit produce can be eaten, and it can be used for its normal usage. I can't do something which is an abnormal usage, so therefore, grapes are for drinking or for eating. Oil I can put on my skin as well. But that's it says I can do normal usage. The Gemara in the Bavli, which explains this in source number 7, the Tanya, Chamarim Shayu, Osim Alacha BePerot Shviit, Sochran Shviit, Mai Sochran Shviit, Ilema Devin Le Schar BePerot Shviit, Nimsa Zeporea Chavo BePerot Shviit, Vatorah Amra, Laochla. I need to explain this. I did not want to go into the whole Gemara. I don't want to explain the context of the Gemara. It's talking about certain people who would make their money from Perot Shviit. So the Gemara says, what do you mean making your money from Perot Shviit? The Torah said, la'ochla v'lo l'schora. This is very important. Because this is going to be a point that people are going to get confused on. Remember I said before that some people have claimed, hold it, if you eat perot shviyit, you're fulfilling a mitzvah. It has kedusha, you're fulfilling a mitzvah. So it's interesting that the Gemara over here has what's called a limud. What's the limud? Limud is that perot shviyot is for eating. That was the Mishnah said. Things which are for eating, you can eat. How does the Gemara know this? Because it says, la'ochla. La'ochla, but what can't you do? Velo l'schora. By the way, did that mean that there's a positive commandment to eat it, or does that mean that you're not allowed to sell it? How does Torah Shebal Peh understand the mitzvah of la'ochla? What does it mean, la'ochla? Again, mitzvah to eat it or not to sell it. What did the Gemara say? La'ochla velo l'schora. If we're not sure yet, let's look in the Rambam source 8. Perut shviyot nitnu la'achila l'shtiyah l'sira. By the way, does it say mitzvah la'ochla? What does it say? Nitznu la'achila v'l'shtiyah l'sichah v'l'kad aner v'l'tzvi'ah. Right, almost directly from the Gemara. Mi piya shmua lamdu. How do we learn this? Tiya aflakad aner l'tzvi'ah b'nvet. Continue. Ein osin schorah b'perot shviyit v'im ratzah l'mkor ma'at m'perot shviyit mocher v'otan adamim areihin ki perot shviyit l'ilkach b'hem ma'achal v'yachal b'ktushat shviyit v'oto p'rinam ka reihu b'ktushato shaya. Basically telling that if you do schorah, then the money now becomes holy because the fruit was holy, so the money, the holiness gets transferred over to the money, and you need to buy other fruit with that, which now becomes holy with this, if you do any schora. Continue. The Ramban in Source 10 writes, Mitzvat Shlishit She'amra Torah B'Perot Shviyit. These are things, if you look at his headline, it's his Sefer Mitzvot, things the Rambam forgot. So this is a big argument, how you count your 613 mitzvot. So this is the third one the Rambam forgot. He never wrote this thing which we're about to read. So the Ramban says it's a mitzvah to eat it. V'dershu, how do Chazal understand la'ochla? La'ochla v'lo l'schora. What does it mean that you have to eat it? It means you eat it, but you don't sell it. He says it again at the very end of Alashon Achila, Maskir Beyamakatub Bekomakom, Vinea Oses Schora Behem Over Ba'ase. Which means the Ramban is not saying that there's a mitzvah asay to eat it. What's he saying? If you sell Perot Shviyit, you broke the positive mitzvah of Achila. Did that make any sense? What does the Ramban say it means when it says la'ochla? La'ochla means la'ochla v'lo l'schora. That's Torah Shebal Peh. I'm going to say this again. We generally have mitzvot asay and mitzvot lo tasay. Mitzvot asay generally tell you do this. Mitzvot lo tasay tell you don't do this. The mitzvah tasay of la'achila means, according to the Ramban, lo l'schora. Doesn't mean, and now I want to go back a second. It doesn't mean that this is a mitzvah to eat it. It means that there's the mitzvah not to sell it. La'ochla v'lo l'schora. So therefore, I have things growing in my field. What can I do with it? I can eat it. I'm not allowed to sell it. So what happens if I want to sell it? It should be confiscated. I'm not allowed to make money. What's the whole purpose for when the Ramban said, the whole purpose of the Otzar Beitin was what? Lo l'schora. Why? Because then you're breaking a mitzvah taseh. You're not allowed to have schora. You're not allowed to have commerce with perot shviyit. Why? Because that breaks the mitzvah to say. But I'm going to say it again. The Ramban never said there's a mitzvah to eat it. He said there's a mitzvah of fulfilling the Torah commandment la'ochla. What does it mean when you fulfill the Torah commandment of la'ochla? Of not doing schora. So this is the funniest thing to me. I'm just kidding, the funniest thing. I have a strange sense of humor. It's the funniest thing. When you do the Otzar Beitin, the people trying to sell it will say, because now you could do the mitzvah to say of achila by selling it and selling it and selling it. So do you realize what's really going on then? Don't tell me you're fulfilling the Ramban by doing the Otzar Beitin. The Ramban is saying, no, the whole reason for the Otzar Beitin is to do the ochla v'lo the schora. And by doing the Otzar Beitin today, where money goes to the farmer, and then money goes when you buy it, how is that no schora going on over here? And don't tell me you're fulfilling the Ramban, which means the argument that there is a fulfillment of eating kudshim by eating perot shviyit is just not true, and I want to add two more levels to this, if I can. Yeah. Yeah. Which means it's normal usage. normal usage is to take for three meals. So now I want to add to this a little bit. I've already claimed now a couple of things. One, you can't sell Peirot Shviyot. How do I know you can't? This is a mitzvah taseh. The Gemara said it. The Ramban says this is a mitzvah taseh. La ochla. So a couple of points here. First of all, the Chazon Ish agrees with me. So that should be enough, right? The Chazon Ish agrees that I'm reading the Ramban correctly. There is somebody known as the Megillat Esther who argues with the Ramban, who misquotes the Ramban, who understands that Ramban says that it is a mitzvah to eat, and then he argues with him. So that's great, but I just don't think he understood the Ramban correctly, and I'll say it again now, the Chazon Ish agrees with the way that I just now read this Ramban. He thinks the Ramban said that it's a mitzvah to eat it, but I'll say it again, I don't think that's what the Ramban said or ever said. If you want, you can look at source number 15 to Chaim Kinevsky, who's a nephew of the Chazon Ish.
He backs up the
same. Excuse me?
He's backing up
but he's saying, what does the Ramban mean? The Ramban means that you shouldn't sell it. Not the Ramban means it's mitzvah to eat it. So this is, right? So I'm just saying we can look over here, but he also agrees that I'm reading this Ramban correctly. The Kavanat Ramban, Raksh. The mitzvah of eating it is not that you should eat it. The mitzvah of eating it is that you shouldn't do schora. That's the mitzvah of eating it. That's what eating it means. It means the ochla v'lo l'schora. That's the mitzvah taseh. What is the mitzvah taseh of eating it? According to the Ramban, not to eat it, just not to do business. Because that's how Torah Shor Al Peh works. I can't do anything about that. But that's, even though, by the way, this may be counterintuitive, that's the way Torah Shor Al Peh. You might say it, but I'll say it again. That's not how the Gemara learns it. The Gemara says, "Oh, what does la ochla mean?" It means la ochla below the schora. The Ramban, who's the one again, I'm going to say this again. The Ramban was the one who says, "Yeah, we should have an otzer beitim, but why to avoid schora? Why? Because that's the mitzvah taseh." And the Ramban himself then tells you, "What's the mitzvah taseh? La ochla below the schora." So it's all very clear to me that if you're going to try to use the Ramban as your source for the Otzer Beitin on the one hand and how it's a mitzvah to eat it on the other hand, you're going to have a hard time proving both of those points because he actually disagrees with both. Okay. Do you remember that we, last time, whenever it was that we learned, it was like a month ago, right? The last time, when we talked about the Heter Mechira, one of the things that I spent a lot of time in the beginning trying to illustrate was that Shemitah Bizman is Midrabanan. Yes? And I think we were pretty successful at that. So if Shemitah Bizman is Ezra Banan, so here's a general philosophical question, which again, I am being Migamati. I'm going to present one side of this, though I will admit there's two sides. But I'm just letting you know I'm choosing one side. When I have a mitzvah Midra Banan, you know, here is, for those of you who always wanted to learn in yeshiva, in a brisker yeshiva, so one of the things that they do is they try to always analyze what exactly is the particular mitzvah and how does it work. So one of the basic distinctions that comes up is this mitzvah on the person, which is called the gavra, or is this mitzvah on the cheftza, on the object? Should I try that again? It's an analysis about how the dynamics work. Is it on the object or is it on the person? So therefore, for example, what? Chametz on Pesach. Is it just that I can't eat it, but it's perfectly fine? No, it's that the cheftza over here is cheftza of chametz. I happen not to be able to eat it because the cheftza itself is not allowed. And I can go through every single mitzvah and try to analyze it in those terms. Is it something which applies to the person or something applies to the object? And I'm not going to say that it always will give you insight into topics, but it's an important issue. When it comes to mitzvah d'rabbanan, a rabbinical mitzvah, do the rabbanan change physical reality or do the rabbanan tell us how to behave? Should I say that again? Do the rabbanan change physical reality or do the rabbanan tell us how to behave? Should I say that? I'll say it in different language now. Do the Rabbanan redefine what this Heftza is, what the object is, or do they tell us what our orientation should be towards that object? Should I try it again? If the Rabbanan say that this thing cannot be eaten, one second, are they saying that this thing is not kosher? Or are they saying, oh, it's kosher, but you shouldn't eat it? Chicken and milk together. On a Torah level, is it kosher or not? Yes. The Rabbanan say not to eat it. Did that thing now become a cheftza shel iser? Is the object something which can't be eaten? Or, no, the object is fine. But I can't eat that because, so what's the mandate of the Chachamim? Do they define reality? Or do they tell us what to do? Do you like that distinction, or you don't even like the distinction? Do Chachamim define reality? So it could be. It is. I think an interesting and complicated issue. It could be that regarding Torah level laws, they may define reality, because regarding a Torah level law, they say no, that's an etrog, but that's not an etrog. So they now said you fulfill your command with that, because that's what an etrog is. So look at source 16. This is Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel was one of the great, not that well known in non-yeshivish circles, achronim. Rav Yosef Engel writes over here as follows, source 16. Od he'erichu achronim b'sifreihim b'chidush sfara d'kol isurim d'rabanan ach isuri gavrahema lo isuri cheftza v'divrei mefursamim. So he says it's well known that a lot of the achronim go out of their way to tell you that when it comes to rabbinic law, the rabbis tell us what to do, but they don't define reality. It's on the gav and on the cheftza. By the way, why would that be? What pasuk can you bring in order to stake a claim what it is that we should do? What's the source of rabbinic authority? Lo tasur yaminu smol, right? Don't deviate left or right. So what does that tell me? Does that tell me that they just now defined reality? Or does that tell me that I need to listen to them? Which means rabbinic lore, is it a question of adherence or defining reality? So when I realize the pasuk is lo tasur, that's telling me lo tasur. Not that they're necessarily even right, which I know is a little scary, but I need to listen to them. So now if that's the case, so what is the mandate of the, again, we'll try this again, what is the mandate then of the Chachamim? The mandate is that we need to listen to them. So now I'm going to ask again. If Shemitah Bizman is Ezra Rabbanon, does this fruit have any Kedushat Shviyat on it? Not at all. But what do the rabbis say? Treat it as if Kedushat Shviyat. Can I then claim that I got a mitzvah as if I'm eating a korban when I eat something which on a deraita level does not have any Kedusha? The Rabbanon didn't give it any Kedusha because the Rabbanon can't give it Kedusha. All the Rabbanon can possibly say to me is make believe it has Kedusha. Okay, I'll make believe it has Kedusha. Doesn't give it Kedusha because all the rabbis can do is they can tell me what to do, but they can't define the reality of that particular fruit. So if that's the case, I'll try all over again. Even if you're going to claim according to the Ramban, like the Megillat Esther claimed, which is wrong, that eating perot shviyat is a mitzvah because it says la'ochla, but the Ramban didn't really say that. What did the Ramban really say? That la'ochla means la'ochla la'oschara. So even if you want to misinterpret this and say there's a mitzvah of eating perot shviyat, that's great. But that's only if shviyat is d'oraita. If shviyat is d'rabanan, how can I claim that there's a mitzvah of eating perot shviyat d'rabanan because perot shviyat d'rabanan don't have kedushat shviyat? All that they have is that I'm supposed to treat it as if it is a kedushat shviyat. Okay. So I am therefore concluding when it comes to the Otzer Beit Din, I'm completely unconvinced. I don't begin to see where it has any, other than the words Otzer Beit Din, I don't believe it has any resemblance to what was mentioned in the Tosefta. And that's not even dealing with the question. It's Tosefta only talking in ancient history, Bereishona, without dealing with the problem of why the Bavli and Rishami don't quote this Tosefta, without dealing with the problem why the Rambam doesn't rule like this Tosefta, and even the one who does rule like this Tosefta is the Ramban, right? We have the Rashas, right? Rash Surielo, who says, but it only helped for Perot from the sixth year. But even the Ramban, who's probably the one who's most enthusiastic about the Otzer Beit Din, he says the whole reason for this is to facilitate everything being ownerless in order to avoid commerce. in order to make sure it's never sold. Why? Because according to the Ramban, that's the mitzvah taseh le'ochla v'lo l'schora, to avoid commerce. So by the time you put this all together, then you're left scratching your head. How can you possibly put together an Otzer Beitin today and say that this Otzer Beitin is based on the Tosefta and there's no commerce taking place when there's commerce all over the place? The farmer gets paid, the workers get paid, the person who buys it pays for it, but they're going to try to convince us, no, you're not paying for the fruit, you're only paying for everything around the fruit. And then you're left with a question. Why is it when I'm not paying for the fruit, it's more expensive? Why, and this bothered me more than anything else, why was the prettier etrog more expensive like the other 6 years? If it's Otzer Beitin, and I'm not paying for the fruit. So then how can you convince me that this, so I guess they'll try to claim, in order to make sure no damage happened to that etrog, we had to put more work into it. Maybe that's what they'll claim. Again, I don't want to say that the whole thing is a joke. I just think it's a joke. It's not nice. Should I apologize for not being nice? Is that yes? Or it's okay? You don't mind? Yeah. And now you realize that vegetables creates a huge problem. How in the world did we get into vegetables over here? Okay. I want to now move to modern times. The first Otzer Beitin, as far as I know, was instituted in the Shemitah of 1910. Source 17 is the way that it's quoted in a number of Sfarim that I saw. And if you look at the headline, it says, Source 17, Nusach Heskem Shinarach Bein Habadatz Birushalayim Lebein Achad. What's the following word? And what is that? Achad Icharim. What is that? One of the farmers. So whoever wrote this, what's the most important thing as far as he's concerned? The Badatz in Yerushalayim. The Badatz made this. Now realize at the exact same time, Rav Kook already is in Israel. Rav Kook is the rabbi for Yafo and all of what's called the Moshavot and all of the farms and all of the places that things are growing. Rav Kook is advocating the Heter Mechira. As we have seen previously, he's not the one who made it up. It's not the first time, it's not the second time, it's not even the third time that it's being used. But Rav Kook is advocating the Otzer Beitin. And, sorry, the Heter Mechira. And we find that at the same time that one of the farmers over here has the Otzer Beitin together with the Badatz in Yerushalayim. Now, if I'm not mistaken, and I may be, if I'm not mistaken, this farmer is the one who came up with the idea of the Otzer Beitin. Of course, as I said in a lot of the early sources, he's a nameless farmer, some farmer. So you would think, okay, farmer, who's the farmer? Meaning it's the Badatz in Yerushalayim. I think it's the farmer who came up with the idea, and I'm going to explain myself. Just in case you can't read this scribble in Source 17, yes? It's actually typed out right underneath it. So again, who is this anonymous farmer? Bolafanenu, Beitin Atzedek de Por Yerushalayim, Hacham Harav Hagon, V'chule, Morenu, Tzvi Hirsch Khan. I will let you know now that he is of no relation to me for a couple of reasons. One is that I have very, very few relatives named Khan. My father's an only child, and I don't know of any relative. I don't know of any relatives named Khan in America. I have two brothers named Khan. I have four sons. My daughter, meanwhile, is a Khan. My sister is an ex-Khan. But more than that, and his name wasn't Khan, by the way. His real name was not Khan. So on top of all that, I have no relatives, and he's not really Khan, but that's part of a larger story, which maybe I'll get to. So it says, Balifanenu, and by the way, that itself to me is quite intriguing. Why would they say Balifanenu? Why would they say that he came to us? What should they have said? I know that this is like totally unfair now to pick on those kind of words in a contract, but what should they say? say, we, the Beit Din of Yerushalayim, are hereby appointing this person to run our Otzer Beit Din. But instead they phrased it differently. How do they phrase it? Balafanenu, this guy came in front of us. Now again, when you look at the headline on top of source, by the top of source 16, one of the farmers, and then you read over here the actual context, they're calling him Harav Hagon Tzvi Hirsch Khan Mirechovot. V'amar lanu, and he said to us, Shehu mafkir et perot karmo, v'zeitav, v'ilonotav, v'shanazu ashvi'it, kimitzvah aleinu b'toratenu. He said to us, he wants to declare everything ownerless. By the way, you don't know yet what he's really saying. You know what he's really saying? I am not listening to Rav Kook and doing the hetem achira. By the way, how do I know that that's what he's really saying? Here's where it gets good. How do I know that's what he's really saying? Because, of course, I found the letter that he wrote to Rav Kook. And he said, how in the world are you doing a hetem achira? It doesn't work. And then Rav Kook writes back to him and defends himself and says, hold it. I think it does work. So I know now that here is somebody. By the way, should I tell you another secret about this guy? This farmer from Rehovot? Anybody know which yeshiva Rav Kook learned in? You don't know. He learned in Volozhin. Anybody want to guess where this fellow learned? He learned in Volozhin. They knew each, I assume they knew each other from yeshiva. So this from Tzvi Hirsch Khan, by the way, let me look at source 18. Baruch Bezrat Hashem, Or Liyom Vav, Erev Shabbat Kodesh, L'Seder Tova Aretz, Tafresh Ayin, Po, Ir HaKodesh Yafo. Which book is this? Mishpat Kohen. Whose Shayos and Shuvat are these? Rav Kook. Shalom Baruch L'Chvod Yididi HaRav, HaMa'or HaGola, Otzer Torah V'Yir, Marenu V'Rabbeinu HaRav Tzvi Hirsch Khan Shlita. Same guy. Oh, isn't it interesting that Rav Kook has a letter to him, and he writes to him, Kuntraso hayakar higia b'moado, the kuntras that you wrote, the whole essay that you wrote, arrived, of bnei hatradot harabot, lo yalizman gam lavor alvar, I didn't have time to go through it, v'ataka sheba mechtavo hasheni, and now that you wrote me a second letter, nitorarti lashiv gam kein adata kuntras, I'm going to respond to that as well, ukimuvan b'kitzor av shiri b'zrat Hashem, I want to say thank you. I never claimed that everybody agrees with me. This whole letter is about the Hetter Mechira. He goes on to say, I don't accept the Hetter Mechira. By the way, it gets better than this. So here Rav Kook defends the Hetter Mechira to this same guy. And he signs off on the next page. Okay, look at source 19, because I also like this a lot. Who's it written to, 19? This is one of the letters of Rav Kook. L'chvod havad hanichvad b'rechovot. To the people in charge of the various farmland in Rechovot, Harav Rav Tzvi Khan, kobel lefanai al kvod havad ha-moshevah b'chal. He's complaining to me about the moshevah. Shehem mon'im oto miladeir ezi hidurim shehu chafetz lasot b'perutot l'shana zu b'chshah sheshmita. He wants to be machmir against the Hetter Mechira, and you're not letting him do it. So by the way, this is really interesting, because Rav Kook is defending Rav Tzvi Hirsch Khan not to follow the Hetter Mechira, but what does Rav Tzvi Hirsch Khan want to do? As far as I can tell, he came up with the idea of the Otzer Beit Din. He doesn't go to Rav Kook with the Otzer Beit Din because Rav Kook wants to push the Hetter Mechira. So who does he go to? He goes to the Beit Din in Yerushalayim. By the way, even there it gets a little funny, and I will explain myself in a second. He says, I want to go back to source 17, but on the top of page 5, where he writes, he says, I'm going to make all my things hefker. And at the anavim v'zeitim v'hashkedim, so he has growing in his fields grapes, olives, and almonds. Ba'ad aniye Eretz Yisrael, I want to give everything over to the poor, ka'amor b'toratenu, as it says in our Torah, v'anachnu hachotamim mata gamarnu imo, we agreed with this guy, sheyesh shaliach b'mkomenu, that we are going to appoint the owner of the field as our shaliach. By the way, I do believe this was all this Rav Khan's idea. Harav Hagon Hanau, right, this great rabbi mentioned before, Nitmanami Tono Abadatz, Lashliach, Lefakeach Eldvar Bitsirata Anavim, Mikarmo, Vlikitata Zekim, Bashkedim, Ilonotav. He's going to oversee that everything is run in the proper way. Uliskor Poalim, see, here's where it got interesting. And he will hire workers, Otrim Vidurchim, and all the costs involved in hiring people, the Beit Din says, we will pay for. He will hire non-Jews, and they will do it with a shinui, which you see how scared they are of actually doing work on Shviyit. He'll hire non-Jews, do it with shinui. And when we sell the wine, here's the big bleep, we will then pay him for his overseeing and pay the workers for what they did. And we'll charge the average price until we end up paying off whatever needs to be paid. The cost of the wine have to be less than the market price from last year, because no one's looking to make a profit on this. And then he tells how much it will cost. And we're only going to pay for the workers, and the wine itself will be, the grapes themselves are hefker. Regarding the olives and the almonds being grown, we will not sell it all. Rather, they will be distributed to the poor. And this is the first Otzer Beit Din in modern times. We shook hands. And as we normally make things, the lokas macht and so on. Who signs? Chaim Berlin signs. That's, by the way, going to be very important. Moshe Nachum Wallenstein, Yisro Yaakov Yavetz, Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, Zvi Pesach Frank, and so on. Gamkin Mekubal Alai Kanal Zvi Hirschkan. Okay, so this is the first Otzer Beit Din. What's interesting is that one of the people there is Rav Chaim Berlin. Chaim Berlin, of course, was the son of the Netziv. This fellow's Rosh Yeshiva. I can show you in the Sfarim that he wrote, Tzvi Hirschkorn published two Sfarim called Imrei Tzvi. And in the Imrei Tzvi, one of the Haskamot came from Chaim Berlin, who, by the way, was his relative, just to make this even more interesting. He hired his relative to do this. Tzvi Hirschkorn, and I will try to do this as simply as possible, his great-grandfather was married to the daughter of Rav Chaim of Volozhin. Her first husband was a Soloveitchik, and he died young. So then all the Soloveitchiks, the Beis Halevi, Rav Chaim, and so on, who, by the way, all worked in the Yeshiva of Volozhin over the years, came from the same family, same mother, as this fellow's wife came from. He married into the family. His father-in-law was a very famous rabbi. His father-in-law's brother was one of the biggest poskim in Europe. He was basically related to all the people over here involved in this. And he himself had a reputation as a big Talmid Chacham. I don't have it here, the way that when Rav Kook writes to him, look at the end of source 18. Rav Kook signs off, V'avshem yibrach yichanenu leyot mishivei eretz chemdatenu mimarbei shalom b'Yisrael v'olam l'kadesh et shmo gadol amo v'anachalato uvizeh yitromeim keren torah takdosha knesset, I think v'nefesh yidid, right, and so on. Basically, Rav Kook saw him as an ally and as a friend, but he did not want to be Mekel on the Het HaMechira. So Rav Kook, by the way, what happened afterwards, because I'm giving you just a drop of all this, afterwards, the fruit and vegetables of the Het Mechira were not bought in Yerushalayim. Nobody would buy it. His stuff from the Otzer Beit Din was taken, even though somebody attacked it. The Ridvaz, who was in Tzfat, said the whole thing is a joke, and this soul doesn't work, and he attacked everything. But the Beit Din Yerushalayim went for this. And the reason they went for this is because they didn't want to go for the Het Mechira. They thought this was better. As I said, I don't necessarily agree. When Rav Kook found out that no one was buying it, then he tried to make an Otzer Beit Din of the Het Mechira things. And we have some interesting letters that went back and forth between Rav Chaim Berlin and between Rav Kook on this. And of course, the other element that came into this is it all hit the newspapers immediately. And the newspapers try to rile things up. And Rav Chaim Berlin says, why did my private letter to you get into the newspaper before I even had whatever chance to respond, and so on. And every single element that you can imagine got involved in all this as well. But you'll notice along the way that in this first Otzer Beit Din, most of the stuff he makes hefker. The only thing he doesn't make hefker is the stuff which is most complicated, and it's wine. He says, okay, I will oversee the production of this, but the workers who will be hired are non-Jewish workers, and even the stuff they do will be done with the shinoi. I'm going to oversee it, so therefore the cost of wine will be sold until we pay off the workers and pay off for my overseeing using the expertise. Basically, he didn't want to lose money that year, but he wasn't looking to make any kind of profit. And what he threw into all of this is that we're just going to give out all the other stuff as per the original Otzer Beit Din by giving everything out for free. The main change that took place here was to hire the non-Jewish workers involved in it and then have the sales, but it had to be less than the previous year, and cover it. Over the years, the one who was actually makel on this, on the Otzer Beit Din, was, you'll never guess, because you would not associate him with Kulot, is the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish let Jews do the work. And with the Chazon Ish, we begin to find much more heterim. But eventually, see, I think the whole thing is psychological. I'm talking about the Chardal community, is that they know that the Chazon Ish, and therefore the more yeshivish type, will go for the Otzer Beit Din, and therefore it's very uncomfortable to follow something that people who are quote-unquote more religious than you don't follow, so they feel as if that doing the Otzer Beit Din is better. On the other hand, and I say this with all due respect to everybody who gives that terem, I fail to see how the Otzer Beit Din implemented today, first of all, doesn't even resemble the one that we find from 1910, but secondly, it doesn't even begin to follow what we find in the Tosefta. The best defense that you can say to me is Shemitah Bizman is Ezra Rabbanan, and once Shemitah is Rabbanan, so therefore we can play whatever game we want. But you're going to ask me which game is better to play. Is it better to sell the land? And I understand the hesitation of selling them. That's what the Chazon Ish didn't like. He goes, they're not allowed to sell the land. So once he's decided you can't sell the land, then the Heter Mechira was no longer an option for him. But if selling the land is not a problem, and again, we went into this last time, if it's not a problem in the way that it was done this past time, all the more so. So then at that point, once you realize that the Lo Tichonim is not a problem, so then the Heter Mechira becomes a much stronger point. Over here, if you can get somebody to sponsor the Heter Mechira, get the government to take government money and pay the farmers, or to pay the farmers, you don't have to pay the farmers, everything is hefker. If you get the government to give all the produce out for free, that's the original Otzer Beit Din. But the whole point of the Ramban, I'm saying that's the irony, to use the Ramban. The whole point of the Ramban is that you're not allowed to sell the stuff. You're not allowed to buy it, you're not allowed to sell it. So to use the Ramban as the proof, and then say, and even more than that, but now you're eating stuff which has Kedusha. You're not eating stuff which is Kedusha. It's a mitzvah Rabbanan. If it's a Rabbanan, it's on the Gavra, it's not on the Cheft. So there's no Kedusha itself. We have to treat it as if it has Kedusha. You can't claim it's like eating a carbon. It's like eating a carbon Rabbanan. It's not like eating a carbon. And the whole point of L'Ochla was L'Ochla V'lo L'Schora. So the whole point of the Ramban was that you can't sell it. So now you sell it in order to eat it because you want to do the mitzvah. The whole thing is completely convoluted, and I don't see where it all begins. And for that reason, I told you that I was going to be completely polemical today, but for that reason, I failed to see how the Otzer Beit Din is a better solution than the Heter Mechira. It's slightly better, but what bothers me is the money changing hands. And by the way, and all of that is on top of the fact that who says the Otzer Beit Din is the halacha? I believe that this fellow, the Imre Tzvi, who by the way, at the end, his real family name was Tzlal Yachin, which is a well-known family. He changed his name to avoid the draft at one point in Europe. He came to Israel. He was a rabbi of a town in Europe. came to, took over for his father-in-law. He came to Israel. His brother bought him this place, told him to come over, and he made wine, and he sold it back to Europe as well. And he made wine for a living. At some point when he was getting older, he never had children. He turned to two of his nephews, and he offered them the farm on condition that they keep Shabbat and they keep Halacha. And two of his nephews turned him down. One of his nephews, there were two brothers. One changed the family name. It was from his sister's children. One's family name was Ben Ami, and the other was Dankner. And they both turned him down. They said, "We're not willing." Dankner, by the way, ended up making a lot. They both ended up making lots and lots of money, and they opened up the diamond exchange in Israel. Nochi Dankner is the grandson of his brother. So he ended up taking his farm and taking all of his products, taking everything, and donated it to a kollel in Yerushalayim. He left Rehovot, moved to Yerushalayim, and he was buried in Har HaZeitim. So some book collector found one of his books. The first volume, the guy made all kinds of mistakes, but the first volume was published back in Europe. And in it, he makes references that he's moving to Rehovot. Rehovot jumps up on three or four times. And then was published after he died, and it says, today, of Har HaZeitim, which is just such a strange thing to say, that he lives in Har HaZeitim, he doesn't live there. I understand why he did that, because he saw the whole younger generation in Rehovot not being religious. By the way, he opened up schools. He was on the vod of the schools there, together with Rav Kook. They signed their names together. I mean, they were friends, they were colleagues, and most of what went back and forth is done respectfully, but he absolutely attacked Rav Kook on this. And then he went to the Beit Din Yerushalayim, and I love that thing. One of the farmers, you know, this is the contract, one of the farmers, I believe that this farmer, who, as I said, was a huge Talmud Chacham, I believe he's the one who came up with the idea, and essentially he's a businessman as well. I don't want to say that as a negative way. He's a businessman saying, how do I not lose the farm on this year? Let me at least cover my costs. And the way of covering the costs was saying, I'll give away the olives, I'll give away the almonds, but let me at least get cost involved of the wine that I can make so I don't lose everything. But at the end, he gave away everything. And I saw two different versions. One is that he gave it to a kollel in Yerushalayim, and a second I saw that he ended up donating everything to the Diskin orphanage. I have not been able to figure out which one is actually the correct story, but at the end he left Rehovot, and he left depressed about the whole new generation of Israelis who no longer kept anything, and as I said, he joined the rest of those fellows in Yerushalayim.